Good morning, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, FJ at OffbeatOregon.com, and this is the Daily Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. Thanks for downloading, and I sure hope you enjoy the show today. This story was first published on July 1st of 2021 under the headline Stuart Holbrook, Spirit of Mid-Century Oregon. It's part one of a two-part presentation of the life and times of Stuart Holes Holbrook. Here we go. 98 years ago, in a logging camp deep in the forests of British Columbia, a logger in a funny hat walked up to a big stump, an axe in his hand. Taking off the hat, it was a battered bowler, an old-fashioned dandy's hat even in 1923, he laid it on the stump, set a nail in it, and drove it in. Then he turned and walked away. Probably he walked straight to the logging locomotive for his last ride into town. Nailing the hat to the stump was a symbolic act. Stuart H. Holbrook was quitting the logging business forever. For Holbrook, the hat was an especially significant object, and if he'd thought more about it, he probably would have realized he really wanted to keep it. He had bought it 3 years earlier in Boston, where he had found himself at loose ends and with some money in his pocket. He'd used the money to buy two things: the Derby, brand new from the Jordan Marsh Emporium, and a round-trip ticket to British Columbia. He'd planned on a nice scenic trip, a little time wandering around seeing the enormous trees he kept hearing about, and another nice scenic trip home. If it sounds a bit weird to book a cross-continental train trip just to see some trees, well, it wasn't for Holbrook. Timber was practically in his blood. He was born in a timber town, Newport, Vermont, population 5,000. This was River Pig country, and every small boy growing up in Newport wanted to be one of the brave, brawny men who worked the great log drives down the Connecticut River. Holbrook was, of course, no exception. In high school, Holbrook worked summers at the logging camps that his father operated. When he was 18, his family moved to Winnipeg, and he didn't bother finishing high school. Instead, he just took a job as a Cub reporter for the local newspaper and played on a minor league baseball team and made a little extra money on the vaudeville stage as a yodeler. One thing led to another, and a few months later, Yodelin' Holbrook had joined a traveling stock theater troupe, the Harry Sinclair Stock Company. Holbrook later characterized this as the worst dramatic stock company an amused god ever permitted to roam. It must have been a decent enough outfit, though, because one of the other members was a young Boris Karloff. But Harry Sinclair himself was an old rascal of the first water. He insisted on playing all the male romantic leads himself, although he was 71 years old, while Stuart played supporting roles. It was exasperating and sometimes embarrassing, but that was the job, and it was a living. Until one day it wasn't. A year after Holbrook joined, Harry Sinclair dissolved the company through the simple expedient of disappearing in the night with the cash box, leaving his players flat and unpaid to make their way home as best they could. Shortly thereafter, the First World War broke out, and Holbrook enlisted. Over the next couple years, he rose to the rank of first sergeant. He fought in the trenches of France, and between military activities, he wrote, directed, and acted in plays for the troops over there. Back stateside, after the war ended, Holbrook achieved his childhood ambition of working as a river pig on one of the last great log drives on the Connecticut River. And that was probably where he got the money that he spent on the Derby hat and the tree viewing ticket that day in 1920. It would change his life forever. When Stuart Holbrook arrived in British Columbia, he found his brand new Derby was an object of considerable interest among the locals there. Such headgear was common for loggers to wear when coming to town to blow her in the Northeast woods, but not on the West Coast. "I think that at that time, in 1920, it was the only Derby hat in all the province," he wrote in a 1931 article in the American Mercury. "I had noticed people in the street looking at it. It got me the job, anyway." By which he means, when he interviewed for a job on a logging crew in the BC woods, the owner found his headgear so amusing that he decided to offer him the job. Some time later, Holbrook decided he was on the West Coast to stay. He rode the logging locomotive on its next trip into town and cashed in his return ticket. Over the next 3 years, he did a little bit of everything. Scaling logs, supervising fallers and buckers, setting chokers, serving as camp medic, and so on. He spent a lot of time in the camp chatting up the loggers, too. Holbrook was the kind of guy who could and would talk to anyone. And he used the stories he heard in articles that he started publishing under the byline Holes Holbrook to various lumber industry magazines. By 1923, he was making more money writing than he was logging, and the time it required was cutting into his duties. The tipping point, the log that broke the camel's back, if you will, came when the Century magazine published his article, "The Bull Cook, When He Rings the Gong, the Boys Have to Get Up," for 100 American dollars. That was the equivalent of a little shy of 1,600 in 2021 currency. That's when he decided to nail the old derby hat to a stump and come to town for good. He picked Portland for his new home because it had the best library, in his opinion, on the West Coast, plus it was smack in the middle of logging country. Upon arrival, he got a job as an associate editor of 4L Lumber News. This was the official publication of the Loyal Legion of Loggers and Lumbermen, a government-sponsored loggers union created during the First World War as an alternative to the more radical Industrial Workers of the World Union, the IWW, a.k.a. the Wobblies. We'll talk about how Holes did in his new job in his new town in part two of this two-part presentation tomorrow. Well, that's our show for today. Thanks again for listening. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. What you've been listening to is one of more than 700 stories originally created and published as newspaper columns in first-run syndication between 2008 and today. You can read them all at offbeatoregon.com. Other Offbeat Oregon goodies include an active Facebook page, a ton of historic photos, and a bunch more stuff, including visuals for today's show and full citations to sources, all accessible through our hub page at offbeatoregon.com. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band and was written by Carmen Ficarra. Listen and learn more at atlasstringband.com. Episodes of Offbeat Oregon History are uploaded around 6 a.m. every weekday, so the next one will be on your device and ready to go before you know it. Until then, go out and fill up the rest of the day with good stuff. Bye now.